Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks, the number one global fintech radio show and podcast. I'm Brett King, and my co-host today is Chloe James. She's the group media director for RFI Group and previously the host of The Enterprise with Chloe James on Sky News Australia. Chloe, welcome back.
Thank you. Amongst other shows, I had a few on Sky.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, sorry.
Great to be here.
Yeah. So we look forward to seeing you back on the TV tube sometime soon. Now, just some interesting news for those to kick us off in the right frame of mind. I don't know whether you heard this out there, but NASA and the Italian Space Agency, I didn't even know Italy had a space agency, have found a massive reservoir of water under the one of the Martian poles. And the thesis now from NASA is that there may be actively flowing water on Mars, but underground. So, that's good news for Elon Musk. He may have some water sources available when he gets there. But
I saw this, Brett. I was reading about this yesterday, actually, about how Mars apparently had, and it was thinking of you because of your love of space, and had some of the biggest rivers ever of all time that have obviously dried up. They've just been looking at the geology and geography of Mars.
Absolutely. So, and yet we still only have about 5% of the Martian surface covered in terms of surveys, either from the Global Surveyor, which is like the big camera that's orbiting Mars, or the other instruments. So there's still a lot we don't know about Mars, obviously. But anyway, let's get to the show.
Well, when you go up there, you can tell us all.
Oh, yeah, with Elon. Yeah. So today's show is brought to you by Every Plate. Now, Katie and I recently tried out one of Every Plate's meals. It was a delicious apple pork chop meal. It took 30 minutes to put together this delicious home-cooked meal, faster than ordering from Seamless or Uber Eats here in New York. But the thing I really like is that they've positioned their meal kit as America's best value meal kit. So you get your meals delivered to your door. The average meal is the same price as just a single cup of Starbucks or coffee. And so that, you got other meal plates that cost, even $10 or $20 per serving. But Every Plate is offering 5 chef design recipes each week from only $4.99 per serving. That's insane value. So for 6 free meals across your first 3 weeks and free shipping on your first delivery, go to everyplate.com and enter the promo code FinTech6. That's your Breaking Banks promo code, FinTech6. So let me give that to you again. Go to everyplate.com and enter the promo code FinTech6 and check out Every Plate. Really good value. Apologize to those listeners outside of the US who can't yet access this service, but it's worth checking out.
Yeah, sounds like a pretty good deal. I have lots of healthy, nutritious fintechers out there. Okay, over to me. I'm going to do some conference announcements as I always do. April is really busy. I'm going to go through a few of them. So April 2nd to 5th in Mexico City is the Digital and Open Banking Training Week. And Brett, you will be in Mexico City presenting on Bank 4.0 and RiskMathics. Do you know that?
Yes.
So go to rhythmathics.com to check that one out. April 9th and 10th is the S&P's 8th Annual Global Community Bankers Conference in Dallas, where our good friend JP Nichols will be speaking on what banks need to do to prepare for 2025. Hard to believe that's around the corner, but it really is just around the corner, a couple of years away. Provoke Media is also the podcast partner for Seamless Middle East. That's coming up April 10th and 11th in Dubai. Seamless, obviously, that massive dynamic summit, large-scale exhibition. That's going to bring together those converging worlds of e-commerce, retail, payments, fintech, and identity. So register for that one at seamlessexpo.com/ME for Middle East. The Financial Brand Forum, there is literally something every week in April. The Financial Brand Forum runs from April 15th to 17th in Las Vegas, the world's largest and most elite conference on marketing, CX, data analytics, and digital transformation in the banking industry. Over 2,000 senior leaders from more than 750 financial institutions. It's massive. Get your tickets to the Financial Brand Forum 2019, and that's on their website, financialbrandforum.com. Right, on to May. So there's some other things happening in May other than my wedding. Finovate San Francisco.
There you go. Well, that's a big announcement. What date is your wedding?
It's the 25th of May. I thought
all
I'd throw
so
that
so you're
in
all there. Invited. You're all invited.
Everyone. All 6 million of you. So, well, there's a lot of people coming. I probably wouldn't notice, to be honest. Finovate San Francisco coming up in San Jose, May 7th to 10th. Breaking Banks is a partner with Finovate, so don't forget to use the special code that we have, Breaking Banks 20. Plenty of fintech friends will be there to demo and present and have a nice time with everyone at Finovate San Francisco, May 7th to 10th.
And don't forget, if you have some news or a conference you want us to share with the Breaking Banks audience, provoke
or a wedding.
Or a wedding. Hit us up on Twitter, Breaking Banks 1, or email us at info@provoke.fm. Now, in the news, the Hong Kong Monetary Authority, after months of consultation, has finally approved the first of many of their digital fintech banking charters in the market. The HKMA said in an announcement yesterday that three licenses initially granted were Livi VB Limited, SC Digital Solutions Limited, and Zhongan Virtual Finance Limited. Now, they're not big names. But SC is Standard Chartered, so their digital solutions team they've built for that. So I guess that is a big name. But there are going to be some bigger names coming, I'm assured, by people in the know. Now, another fintech regulatory news, we saw the New York Fed has announced a fintech advisory board or panel. Better late than never, I guess, to see them doing that. This is not unusual to have fintech advisories for regulators in the space. Many of the regulators, including London City, have engaged heavily with the fintech community. A U.S. company called Payit, a payments platform designed for public services, has raised $100 million from Insight Partners in the US this week. And essentially this, they take all the friction out of e-government. So this is essentially what happens when e-government just doesn't appear quickly enough. So they take processes like paying fines, licenses, DMV-related stuff, health services, and so forth, and they produce the physical hard copy paper documents that the government need for you to apply based on information you enter into Payit's app or website. So removing the friction at a government level through payments.
Well, I mean, that is just huge, isn't it? I mean, anybody who does anything with government anywhere around the world, the paperwork that you have to fill out, yeah. Absolutely. I've got a bit of news as well in keeping with the AI theme, and this one's a bit close to home for me, based here in Toronto. The University of Toronto was this week gifted a pretty impressive $100 million from the business power couple and philanthropist Gerald Schwartz and Heather Reisman, and it is the soon-to-be-built Schwartz-Reisman Innovation Centre. The investment is the largest donation in University of Toronto's history and the largest gift ever to the Canadian innovation sector. So it's a huge complex. It's gathering together world-leading AI scientists, biomedical experts, entrepreneurship network, and the country's largest concentration of student and faculty-led startups. It's really, really quite an amazing, impressive building right in the centre of Toronto here. The gift is also going to support the launch of a newly conceived Schwartz-Reisman Institute of Technology and Society. And I thought this was interesting, Brett, for our conversation later today with the business out of NZ. But the mission is going to be to explore and address the ethical and societal implications of AI and other emerging technologies. So $100 million into University of Toronto there for some pretty impressive things to see over the coming years up here in Canada.
Very good. Well, in the news also this week was, of course, Apple with their big event. And this time, not only did they launch some new tech, but they launched some very old tech, namely the Apple credit card in a partnership with Goldman Sachs. Now, this is not news. We've been hearing about this for a while. But, of course, the detail of this launch sort of emerged through the event. So to join join us in discussing this are two regulars, co-hosts of the show also, Ron Shevlin and Dave Birch. Guys, welcome.
Hey, Brett.
Hey, Brett. Thanks for having me on.
No, thanks for coming on back on the show, guys. So, Dave, maybe we'll start with you. You of course predicted that. You've been a vocal commentator in respect to the plastic form and the need. The lack of need for a card number printed on the front of a card, and asking the question why the mag stripe is still there for many years, at least back as 6 years ago, right?
Let me just tell you a little story about that, Brett. Many years ago, when we were testing the very first EMV cards, we used to make our own EMV cards, and just by taking blank white plastic Java cards and writing card details on them. And of course, these cards don't work properly because they don't have the keys inside them, but it didn't matter because the issuers hadn't got the system set up properly. So we would go to different merchants and just check and see if these cards worked. And no one ever said a thing about us putting these cards into their terminals. Back in 2014, I had a call from some guys in Brazil. There was an issue with the Brazilian banks. They weren't checking the cryptograms properly, and there was some sort of card fraud. And it turns out these guys had done the same thing as we did. They made these blank white cards, Java cards, and went out and tried them out in the stores. But in Brazil, the shopkeeper, in the UK, no one paid any attention of us sticking these cards in their terminals. In Brazil, he goes out to try this card. This completely blank white card, and it puts it in the shopkeeper's, hey, hold on a second, what are you doing? What's that card that you're putting in my terminal? Mm-hmm. And the guy, this is a true story, by the way, the guy has to think quickly on his feet. So he turns around and says, it's the new Apple credit card. And the shopkeeper, the shopkeeper's like, this is fantastic, where can I get one of these?
Better create one.
That was 6 years ago. And the reason why I tell that is because that's people expected 6 years ago that the Apple card would be blank, that it would have nothing on it. And it's just very interesting to me that they've launched it with nothing on it, as I've long called for, with two exceptions, which I can't help but mention. So one is, I did wonder why it still has a magnetic stripe on the back of it. And then I remembered, because you need to be able to use it in, you've got to be able to use it. America and I don't know Rwanda or wherever else. No, I think Rwanda's EMV now. America or Mars, maybe, I don't know. Mars. Anyway, yeah. I'm telling you right now, Elon's rocket to Mars is going to look like the last helicopter out of Saigon, because I email him every day. Don't leave me here with these people, Elon, and I haven't heard back. So if you could put a word in for me, Brett, that would be a big help. The other thing that puzzles me is why it has your name on the front, because having the name on the front of a card really only benefits criminals who find the card lying around in the street. And since it's Apple, I did wonder, why doesn't it have my Apple ID on the front? I mean, why does it say Dave Birch and not donkeybollocks@mac.com or whatever it is people have us there? But you know what I mean? It's like,
Dave, it's because this way people who find the card know who to return it to. How would they know who to return it to if your name's not on the card?
I was just about to say that, Ron. I've found wallets and gone, okay, that's the person. And then I look them up on Facebook Messenger. I'm a very nice person. And I find them and say, hey, I found your wallet. I did it a couple of months ago, and this woman was so grateful. Anyway, it's a good point that Ron makes.
No, listen, if you find the card in the street, throw it away, because if I lose my card, I just order another one with the app. It doesn't cost me anything. I don't care. And if you want to hand the card into a bank, the bank can always send it back to me. You do not need my name on the front of the card. The only people who need that are criminals who are trying to order stuff on.
No, Dave, I think you're missing the thing here. Seriously, I think it's the coolness factor of having your name laser etched on
an
card.
Apple thing.
And as a matter of fact, the only people who are going to get the card are those who think it's cool enough because they have their name laser etched on the card.
Probably.
No, the only people that are going to get the card are people that have already got Apple IDs. So if you find the card in the street and it says DaveBirch@mac.com, you can email me and tell me how I found your card. How does it? You find the card in the street and it says Dave Birch. There could be any Dave Birch. What do you care? If it has the Apple ID on the front, at least you can email me.
Okay,
saying.
Well,
the card's boring, and you're not going to get one anyway.
Well,
right,
so on the boring factor. So Ron, is there anything apart from removing the embossed numbers on the front of the card? Is there anything really innovative about this Apple credit card offering?
On the face of it, I would say absolutely not. I don't think the rewards are competitive enough in the market. You can get better rewards rates from a Bank of America, Capital One, plenty of other issuers. I also think that the whole PFM aspect of the spending data and all the real-time stuff, consumers, especially in the U.S., have ignored PFM for 15 years. I'm not sure why all of a sudden they're going to pay attention because it's on their Apple device. And honestly, there's other providers. I mean, Brett, you and Moovin have been doing just as good a job, if not better, with that kind of stuff than
we had it in 2012. Exactly.
We had it in 2012. Yeah. And the folks that helped you develop it had it even years before that as well, and it went nowhere. So the PFM stuff does not seem very compelling to me at all. If you take a step back and kind of look, what's the real, competency in to be successful in the credit card market? You've got to, have some really sophisticated data and analytics capabilities. This is why, Capital One is as successful as it is. It's why a Chase is as successful as it is with a Sapphire card. And I would argue that I just don't simply think Apple is that good at data and analytics. And maybe, they have to rely on Goldman Sachs for that. I just don't, see a lot of compelling reason that this is good card is going to succeed at all.
But why a physical card? Why didn't they just go for a token? Purely token generated card.
Because it's for America, Brett. I was in Austin, Texas last week for South by Southwest. Just saying, because I'm kind of cool.
That is cool.
And, I go into a store to try and pay for something. I know everything about POS terminals. I go into a store, I look at the terminal, I have no idea how to pay. I can't tell whether I can tap, swipe, insert. Half the terminals I saw had stickers on them saying, no chip, it doesn't work. The gas station had a sign. I took a picture of it and put it on Twitter. The gas station had a sign that said, we accept credit and debit cards inconsistently. And so I said, what does inconsistently mean? She goes, sometimes they work, sometimes they don't.
So if we feel like it, yeah.
In advanced markets, it won't have the stripe on it.
Sort of like cabbies in London, right, Dave?
The stripe is just for America. Listen, I think you're missing the point. You've got to look under the hood to see the fun stuff. The card, boring. It gets Goldman Sachs some consumer credit business. It gets Apple some data. Maybe it drives up a bit of Apple Pay usage because of the 3% bribe. Mm. What's really interesting about this is that the rewards are paid into the Apple Cash account. And you probably saw the simultaneous announcement that you can no longer fund Apple Cash person-to-person payments using a credit card anymore. What's really going on here is this is Apple's attempt to start energizing the Apple Cash ecosystem, getting people like you and me to start using that Apple Cash.
Because they're looking at a closed-loop system.
They're looking at Starbucks. They're looking at what Facebook are going to be doing and what Apple are thinking. Hey, look, if I can get people to stack up some balances on this Apple Cash, which would be a pretty tidy float, it means I can start selling them games and music and television streams and these kind of things without using credit cards. Because if I pay for the app using my Apple Cash balance, that means no Worldpay, no FIS, no processor, no first aid. It means nobody in the middle.
And Apple developers are going to get paid in Apple Cash now too, right?
So I to me, the most interesting, look.
And they're going to move that money out as fast as you can blink your eyes. Dave, I totally agree with you that this is all about the Apple Cash. But look, the reality is in the U.S. market, you got really a bifurcated consumer set. You've got those who pay off their bills on a monthly basis and choose their credit card based on rewards. That group is not going to care about the Apple Card. You can get better rewards elsewhere. And not only that, the last thing they want is their money sitting in an Apple Cash account. So who's going to want this? It's the lower end of the market. And that's maybe the smart aspect of this is that they didn't announce what the interest rates was going to be on this card. They kind of hedged a bit. They said that'll be coming down the line, and made some, gratuitous comments that the interest rates would not be high. But they did a good job about, pointing out that there's not going to be a lot of those penalty fees, which will appeal more to the lower end of the market. Is choosing a card today if they can get one, based on the low interest rate and low annual fees, because they just don't qualify for the higher end. So
Apple's
going after the lower end of the market here, which right now has got fairly high historical default rates. So I'm not sure this is a great time for them to be getting into the market with a low-end card.
Well, they don't care about the default rates because they're not providing the credit. Goldman is. So that's not an Apple.
True.
I think you're right about the but then you see, I'd have to argue, you'd say, well, why are people going to leave money in Apple Cash? There's a lot of Americans who take US dollars that are good anywhere and convert them into Starbucks dollars that aren't. I mean, that seems to work pretty well. So if Apple can persuade people to keep money inside the Apple Cash ecosystem, which actually I think maybe they can.
Well, we've seen it in China with Alipay and Tencent, where it seems to be a one-way street. You know, the customers that have, they link their debit cards, these wallets, and it's only one way. They cash up the wallets and they use the money, you know, in the wallets for discretionary spending. And if,
I was just going to say, Apple have announced the cash out. So you can cash out from an Apple Cash balance onto a Visa debit card, I think, for a 1% fee. I think there's a limit, a maximum $5 or $10 limit on it. But you can cash out ACH into your bank account for free. So if you're building up Apple Cash, I just think the more they can keep inside the ecosystem, the better. And they're not the only people that are thinking, look, hey, what if there was something that was kind of like US dollars, but was ours? You know, this is the thinking behind all of this. I'm convinced of it. Right about the credit product. It's not a fantastic credit product.
But this doesn't. Here's my bugbear: is that, you know, Apple Pay is essentially. Sorry, someone's got some papers rustling in the background. If you could put it on mute, but I will say that, you know, if you look at really Apple Pay and what it's intended to do, it's the mobile wallet of choice for Americans to use. So the real key problem behind this is that this doesn't actually further the interests of mobile payments, does it?
Well, when you say it's the wallet of choice, that's not Walmart Pay has more users than Apple Pay, doesn't it?
I believe so.
I don't have the figures in front of me, but I would guess there are other mobile wallets that have just as much, if not more, volume than Apple. That's why they're trying to do that bribe, the 2% cash back, to try and get you to use your Apple Pay at the odd location that accepts contactless in the US.
Mm. See, Brett, I think you're tapping into the reality, which is that consumers will act based on what's convenient for them. That's why I put money in the Starbucks app. You're going to spend that money a couple times a week, so you might as well have it there. It's nice and convenient. But I think the thing we haven't really talked about is, you know, all this talk, and I've seen so many articles this week about how this Apple card is a game changer. It's not a game changer because consumers just don't spend that much money on a regular basis with Apple. And so the real player that's going to come into this will be Amazon. Payments.com published something a couple months ago where they estimated that that Amazon represents something like 6% of all consumer retail spending, and it's even higher as a percentage, you know, for Amazon Prime customers. So
also remember, Ron, I'm just backing you up. They've just done that big deal with Worldpay to start accepting Amazon Pay as well. They're very serious players.
Right, and if Amazon were to come out with the Amazon card, it would blow away this Apple card because so many more people spend so much more money on a weekly, regular basis. That's where they want to store their card is with an Amazon, not with an Apple.
Do you think it's Apple's way of just, you know, another way of just getting the brand
locking
there?
Into like the ecosystem?
It's a brand. I read an article on this when I was looking at it today on CNN about brand diehards. And, you know, Apple is so famous for people lining up around the block. You know, is this just another thing to try and get another touch point when maybe it's fading or like tipping off a little bit potentially?
Or lock you more into the phone, right?
Mm. Yeah.
No, here's Chloe. Here's what it is. So if you get an Apple card, you know how they made a big point about how they don't use the data? So all that spending data is stored on the device. And so what's going to happen is after I make a few purchases with my Apple card, my storage space on my device is going to run out. I'm going to have to upgrade my iPhone.
Okay, clever.
That's good.
Nice. It's a good theory.
All right. Well, that's some good Good coverage there, Ron and Dave. Thanks for your thoughts on that. Listen, before we go to the break, I did want to get to Clink and sort of the topic of our show today around conversational AI. And we're welcoming back Clink to the show. We have joining us from Clink, Emma Furlong. So, Emma, welcome to Breaking Banks.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Now, Emma, it's been a while since we had you guys on the show. So tell us about how Clink is going and what you guys have been working on this year and what progress you've made.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it's been an incredible year and a half or so since Clink was last on the podcast. I think when we first spoke, we had signed USAA, but none of our customers were live yet. And since then, we actually launched the world's second largest mobile banking virtual assistant deployment. It's the second largest behind Bank of America's Erica, and it was for Ish Bank, which is the largest bank in Turkey. It was a completely Turkish deployment. So the team at Ish Bank actually built the virtual assistant from the ground up on our platform in Turkish, which is really cool to have one of our deployments be multi-language. And then the second...
Do you have to build an entirely new sort of natural language processing engine for a different language, or is it just basically a dictionary?
No, not at all. So, so we actually don't use a dictionary either. So the way it works is it's completely data driven. And so when it comes to training it in another language, all you have to do is get sample utterances for the training data in the language that you want to deploy the assistant in. And so in Ishbank's case, it was all our same NLU, a lot of our same, out-of-the-box PFM capabilities, but they just loaded the model with Turkish training data.
Okay. You've started to make progress. You don't offer it direct to consumers in the U.S., though, right? You only work through bank partners, correct?
Correct. Yeah. So we have an enterprise model. So we believe that this is something that banks want and are increasingly going to want in the future. And the issue with kind of a black box model of just shipping something to a customer is that when they want new features, when they want to increase the complexity of that experience, they have to keep constantly going back to the vendor for them to create more capabilities. And so that's why we do a platform approach. So we're selling a platform that analysts and you don't even need to be an engineer. So analysts and other employees at banks can actually build and increase the complexity and improve upon the assistant themselves without having to go back to us.
So how do you teach the engine? How do you feed it with the data? Does it just listen to phone calls or?
It's a text driven model. So we take the speech input and then convert it to text, and then the models are trained on sample utterances of text. So, like you just mentioned, call center logs can be very effective at training a model. But another method that Clink uses, and we're actually the only company that does this, but we have crowdsourcing built into the platform, so you can actually launch a crowdsourced job sourcing utterances from a crowd of internet users, and in a matter of hours, you can have hundreds of utterances back.
Well, Turkey is somewhat obscure. Did you particularly go after a bank in that market, or was that just where the client happened to come from?
No, that's where the client happened to come from, but it's actually not our only live deployment. We also went live, I can't name the institution, but it's one of the top banks in the UK. Also live with them for their experience on Facebook Messenger. And so we're getting about 25,000 queries a week through our Facebook Messenger bot, which has saved the bank millions of dollars in the first few months by deflecting those calls that would have gone to the call center.
Okay. Well, this is it's very interesting, Emma. Where can people find out more about what's happening at Clink?
So definitely check out clink.com. There's also been a couple of stories published about us in TechCrunch and Forbes and VentureBeat recently, so people can check those out as well. But yeah, any information about Clink or how to work with us or about we actually have case studies about the two enterprises I just mentioned, all of that can be found on clink.com.
Fantastic. Give me an example of one of the queries that Clink's getting good at answering that you think's a good sort of daily example of how we'll be using voice in banking.
Absolutely. So I think this is actually where Clink is set apart, is that our NLU is meant to handle messy conversation. So there's lots of chatbots out there right now. It's kind of exploded, but they're all really snip. Everything you can do is either gimmicky or really simple. So what's my balance? How much have I spent on food this month? Really simple. But when you're interacting with Clink's technology through your bank, it's much more of a conversation. So you could say, hey, I want to open an account. My name is Emma Furlong and this is my address. And then, the AI could come back and, ask to confirm that information. And you could say, oh, wait, actually, I just got married. My name is Emma Smith. And without having to go back or repeat all of the other information that you had previously given, it can just update it for you. So you can do much more you can execute much more complex transactions and do more with the assistant.
More natural language.
All through the natural language. So it's really back and forth.
Did you know Chloe's getting married?
I heard that earlier on the pod.
We'll have to do a podcast from the wedding, Brett.
Yeah.
a radio show.
Live from guys, so listen.
Sorry, Emma. Taking over.
No, that's good. We're running up against the break, so let's have a quick break here. And after we come back from the break, we'll be talking to Greg Cross, the co-founder of Soul Machines, down under in New Zealand. So stay with us. We'll be right back after the break.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
The Voice America Live Events Channel is here now to showcase your corporate, individual, or organization's live event. Visit voiceamerica.com/live events to see all of our past live events and find out more. Whether it's a multi-day conference, special speaker, or single-day event, we've got everything to make your event a success. We can do a few hours or a few days. For more information about taking your event to the next level, call Jeff Spinard at 480-294-6417 or email info@voiceamerica.com. Again, that's Jeff Spinard at 480-294-6417 or send us an email to info@voiceamerica.com. Voice America is where you are and where you want to be. Join us around the globe as we broadcast live from some of the most interesting events available. Don't forget to view all our live events, including on-demand access to past events that you may have missed by visiting voiceamerica.com/live events.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Breaking Banks featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. I'm your co-host, Chloe James, here with Brett King. We've had a great first half of the show, and now we are on to the second half. And we're going to explore the many ways that the future of AI is evolving and to provide a more lifelike experience. I'm really excited with our first guest, who is Greg Cross from Soul Machines. I've been checking out his website and it is so super lifelike. Just before we get into that, today's show is brought to you by LinkedIn, and we want to mention that. When it's time to make a hire for your small business, naturally you want to find the best person for the job, and odds are that person is on LinkedIn. So two professionals join LinkedIn every second. It is available in 200 countries with more than 590 million professionals on the platform. But as a job platform, LinkedIn Jobs makes it easy to get matched with quality candidates amongst those 590 million who make the most sense for your role. So LinkedIn Jobs uses knowledge of both hard skills and soft skills to match with the people who fit the role the best. Customers rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires. So we've got a sort of a special offer. Post a job today at linkedin.com/fintech and get $50 off your first job post. That's linkedin.com/fintech. T's and C's are available via that link. So let's get on with the show. I'm really excited about this one. Before we went to the break, pardon me, we were talking to Clink on their amazing voice-based AI platform, and Emma Furlong is still with us here, her business designed for banking conversations. But we need to know about other skills here and how AIs can really emote, and this is the emotional bit, that can respond to our emotions appropriately, an AI that understands when we're upset, when we're happy, when we're sad. So in 2016, our next guest, Greg Cross, teamed up with Dr. Mark Sager to create one of the leaders in this space globally, Soul Machines. I'm going to head straight over to Greg and get him to tell us a little bit about it.
Welcome back to the show, Greg.
Hey, thanks, Brett, and hi, Chloe. Congratulations.
for those not listening,
shortly. Exciting news.
Yeah, for those not listening to the first half of the show, this is Breaking Banks with Chloe James, who's getting married, and also Brett King. Greg, back to you. Thank you.
Yeah, it's also been another really big year for Soul Machines. We haven't managed to marry off any of our digital humans yet. But you know, who knows, that
might happen. You're a bit behind Hatsune Miku on that front, dude. you heard about that, right? Akihiro Kanoda, he married his avatar.
We haven't married off any of our digital humans yet. So, but it has been a big year in terms of exploring with some of it, you know, some amazing customers, you know, customers, you know, who are, you know, wanting to operate at the edge, the innovative edge of, you know, what the future of customer experience might look like. So, and, you know, the banking and finance industry, which, you know, have been some of, you know, some of our biggest customers. We've been working, you know, publicly, we've been working with Royal Bank of Scotland in the UK now for 18 months in the development of a digital banking assistant. Likewise with ANZ Bank down here in you know, Australia and New Zealand.
I saw their bot, ANZ Bank. Jamie, she was amazing. I can't believe how clear it was.
And I was in Bahrain the other week with Fatima. The Soul Machines avatar for ABC Bank.
I've seen that one too.
Guys in Bahrain last year when I was at that same conference, and as a result of that work, you know, they really wanted to be the first bank in the Middle East to deploy a digital banker, and you know, they launched Fatima. They're actually down here visiting us in Auckland next week, and I was talking to them yesterday, and they said Fatima has become a celebrity in Bahrain literally overnight. So. You know, that's the newest bank that we've announced. We've got a couple of other banks that we're working with who we haven't announced yet.
So you don't work with just banks, do you?
No, not at this point. So
when you guys started this process, you know, what was your driver? You know, it was, you know, you said to sort of integrate artificial intelligence into society, or, you know, help us communicate with machines. But the emotion piece of this is obviously key. You know, so why is emotional sensitivity in AI, or an AI that can express emotions, why is that important?
Yeah, we think it's really important for a couple of really key reasons. I mean, one, you know, without a doubt, we're going to spend more of our lives as humans interacting with machines. So if, we have this fundamental belief and this fundamental visions that these machines can be more helpful to us, we can learn to trust them and the brands behind them more if they're more like us, so they can connect to us in a much more human-like way. we can use. So that's one part of it. The second part of it goes to the way in which we can personalize, or brands, banks, you know, our customers can personalize their customer experiences by creating a digital human that, you know, we can interact with on a face-to-face basis. As human beings, we are actually wired to interact on a face-to-face basis. So that's another.
Right, so a large portion of our communication is nonverbal, and you're trying to get those nonverbal cues across as well.
Yeah, and that's absolutely exactly right. And you know, what we've seen from, you know, data that we've collected from the customers we've been working with over the last 12 months is, you know, that nonverbal communication adds significantly, significantly improves the closure rates that they're getting from over and above chatbot systems. It significantly, they've seen huge bumps in customer satisfaction levels as a result of that as well. So, it's very, very encouraging in terms of the types of technology that, the types of solutions that we can deploy. Conversational content, conversational AI still has a long way to go. In terms of, you know, the move from NLP, you know, the NLP engines that drive a lot of the AI interactions today, scripted content, you know, towards, you know, the NLG engines, which we're, you know, we're starting to see, you know, come to market and become more readily available, and that enables customers to generate more conversational content from data and on the fly without having to touch human hands.
Greg, but
Ahead, Chloe.
Greg, I was just going to say, I'm really interested to hear the psychology behind this. I was at a summit conference in San Diego a couple of weeks ago, and we had an exercise where you had to sit across from a person and stare into their eyes, and someone had to stay completely still and the other person had to smile, like a big beaming smile, and it was whether you reacted or not. So it's all this psychology around what you're talking about, human interaction, right? So how did your teams all work together when you look at, so the neuroscientists, psychologists? And I'm interested, you know, Brett mentioned in his little bit there about, you know, artists being involved as well. How did all those people work together to really, to really create, you know, this human interaction with an AI?
Yeah, so, I mean, there's two parts to it. You know, literally what our team led by Mark has done is created digital brain. So this incredible team of neuroscientists, psychologists, developmental psychologists, physiologists, artists have actually, you know, studied some of the leading scientific research in neuroscience, and this is a very new and still a very emerging area, and actually modeled different aspects of the human brain. So we actually have in our digital brain created the three, you know, the concepts of three different control systems. So as human beings, we have our brain stem, or our reptilian brain, our limbic system, which is our emotional brain, and our cortex system, which is our rational brain. So we've actually created models, you know, simple models of those control systems, and we use different parts of those control systems to create that synthesized human behavior in exactly the same way we do that ourselves. So when you're staring at somebody in that exercise like you described, your brain's natural reaction, your limbic system's natural reaction is to smile back because of the brain chemicals that your limbic system, you know, generates, and that sends signals along your nerves to your muscles and you smile. Now, you know, you can override that with your rational brain and say, I'm not going to smile. I don't like that person. I'm not going to smile. So that these are the types of interactions.
It's like trying to prevent yourself from yawning when the whole room is yawning around you.
Yeah. I'm a learner when it comes to this sort of neuroscience. Interesting, the limbic system, the emotional system, is not responsible for our laugh. Our laugh comes from our reptilian brain, or our brainstem, because it is a reaction. So, go figure. So, it's a super interesting field and area to be engaged in, and to be, I'm constantly in awe of the work that our team does here.
So I want to talk a bit about the tech, Greg. You know, we had the 5G show last week with Verizon, but when you're looking at the emotional response, obviously for an avatar in particular, less of an issue for conversational AI, but for an avatar that wants to respond to a question or a statement you make, let's say you make a laugh and you now have programmed the avatar. You make a joke and you've now programmed the avatar to respond in kind with a little chuckle or something like that. But isn't the current ecosystem a limitation of that? Because we don't have these AIs on the chip, they're in the cloud. And so we have to wait for all the video feed to come to your AI for that image to be processed and then an emotional response to be put forward. So if you're going to try and beat this uncanny valley of this sort of unnatural responsiveness, it has to be more human-like. So how do you bridge that lag, I guess?
We are a cloud-based solution. Our digital humans are served as a video stream from the cloud, just as a Skype video stream or a FaceTime video stream. So we are always, subject to, bandwidth bottlenecks and the availability of bandwidth. There's a lot we can, there's a lot of really smart tech you can utilize to optimize it, but it may be better to switch the video off and just have a voice conversation with one of the humans. So that is a limitation. We do have the ability, we already have the ability to deploy, in really high volume applications, the digital human, on a smartphone. So it can be, it can be compiled into an Android app or an iOS app.
So do you see that as the future of avatar-based AI, that it will actually be the technology we built in the phone?
I think ultimately it will be a combination of both, Brett. I mean, obviously with, we're doing a bunch of work with Verizon and what they're doing in 5G. Obviously, networks like 5G will substantially improve the performance, on our smartphones, So that's great. But, we're also seeing, the tech platform vendors start to talk about edge computing now, and, and we go round and cycle.
Right, sort of a distributed cloud.
Or client server under another name for us old guys.
Yeah. Now, talk to me about your models that you've built. So you've got a number of digital humans, you say, and some of the models, if you guys are listening to the show out there, go to soulmachines.com and you'll see what I'm talking about. But some of these models are visually spectacular. So how do you get to the point? Obviously, you can use motion capture and things like this, but how do you compile such detailed, digital human models?
The first thing is we don't use, unlike other animation platforms like the games engines, we don't use motion capture at all. Okay. So the digital humans that you've seen to date, or all of them bar one, are based on the real life likeness of actual people. And so one of the, a project we've been working on is we've actually, and I can't tell you who it is quite yet, but we've just completed effectively a digital twin of one of the world's biggest musical celebrities. And it is actually a digital identical twin. So we have a proprietary scanning process which Mark and our team of artists have built over the last 7 years, and we build these, what we call incredibly high fidelity digital humans. It takes us about 3 months to create an absolutely, digital doppelganger, digital identical twin of a real person. And we do that right down to, you know, the scars on their face, the skin blemishes on their face, their, you know, facial hair if they have any. So, I mean, you know, we that's something that, you know, we're quite...
So it's a 3D model, but you're not doing motion capture, right?
No, we don't do motion capture. I mean, our digital brain, you know, and this is really, really critical. I mean, it differentiates us from a lot of the other avatar stuff you see out there. Our digital brain enables us to autonomously animate these digital humans in real time. So they're actually reacting in the same way that you and I react when we're having a conversation. It's been driven by a digital brain, not by pre-recorded video content or motion capture content, which is, you know, has been the background of the games industry and the movie industry. Here's the really interesting thing. You raised Fatima, Brett. Fatima is our first synthetic digital human. So Fatima isn't based on a real life person. Right. We've created this
concept. It's a construct.
Yeah, we've created this concept, we call digital DNA, which means we can blend the DNA of all the existing digital humans we've created together to create completely synthetic digital humans. So Fatima is our first completely synthetic digital human. She does it. She's not based on a real life likeness, but she, as you saw, she is actually, she's hyper lifelike. And this is the world where, you know, we're going to start to see. I mean, we've seen the evolution over the last 12 months of digital influencers like Lil Miquela, which are static 2D CGI characters. I mean, you know, Fatima, you know, is, you know, arguably the world's first fully autonomously animated AI-based digital influencer.
Greg, when it comes to connection and human connection, how have you had to differ what you've done in markets like New Zealand, you're talking about on, you know, one hand, and then I know in other markets around the world that you've worked with, culturally so different. So obviously the AI needs to be quite different, I would have thought, when it comes to how they connect, how they communicate.
Yeah, so absolutely correct. So we've got a large project underway, you know, which will end up spanning Japan, you know, be launched in Japan around the middle of this year, then China, then America. It's for a very large FMCG brand, and you know, so, you know, because this is our first project in Japan, we're having to think, you know, and our psychologists are and our team are having to think, you know, very carefully about the way in which, you know, Japanese connect and express emotion when they're in face-to-face interaction. So, you know, direct and continuous eye contact is, you know, not, you know, part of that relationship. You know, if you mean young women in Japan, if they're going to express emotion, you know, they're going to smile or laugh, they often, you know, raise their hands and partially cover their face. So these are the sorts of things that we are, you know, we're studying, you know, learning and adapting as examples of the different types of culture, the way in which we engage emotion, you know, face to face from an emotional cultural point of view. Well, one of the things that we've added to our digital brain, and, you know, if you check out the research platform that Mark has called Baby X, you know, Baby X has had arms and legs and a motor control system developed over the last 12 months. So, you know, later this year, you know, our Japanese characters will actually be able to, I mean, use their hands in the same way that, you know, I mean, for example, a young Japanese woman might use their hands when they're interacting on a face-to-face basis.
And it must be relevant as well if it's a sort of a product within a market for the consumers of that market, or whether it's something within a market that attracts people from all over the world. I'm thinking of the, you know, avatars that you see in airports, which obviously have to relate to every single different person who might be going through that airport.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so, yeah, I mean, you know, obviously one of the, you know, the big things with, you know, is not, I mean, partly it's cultural differences, but obviously the other thing, you know, ethnic differences, but the other thing is obviously speaking different languages. So, you know, we're now deploying, you know, digital humans that can speak, you know, Japanese, Mandarin, French, German, Spanish, you know, for the very, very first time. So, You know, a lot of our initial clients have taken, you know, a very analog approach to their first digital human being a brand representative for for their technology. I mean, my belief is, you know, you as the customer of a bank should be able to choose, you know, do I want to speak to a male or a female, somebody the same age as me, somebody is the same ethnicity as I am, or whatever language I want to talk in.
Did you see the release this week? It was just this week of a gender-neutral conversational AI.
Yeah.
So that's interesting.
Yeah, very exciting. We're just about, you know, we've got a really interesting project we're just kicking off with one of our clients who wants to build a gender-neutral digital human.
There you go. I do have sort of one last question before we wrap this up, Greg. It's super interesting. We could go on for ages about this. But, in terms of the emotional response thing that we've been talking about, are you currently processing audio and text only from people that engage with your digital humans, or do you actually process video as well, so that you're learning, to recognize emotions in the faces of people that are having a chat with the avatar?
Sure. Yeah, we process video. I mean, you know, our digital brain has a sensory system and a perception system which enables us to process video, recognize, you know, and analyze and recognize, you know, emotion in real time. And then, I mean, even more importantly, respond in real time.
Very cool. Well, obviously, you guys are making some great strides. We got about a minute before we close up here. So, Greg, how can people find out more about Soul Machines?
Obviously check out our webpage, soulmachines.com. There's a lot of great videos on of our tech on our YouTube channel as well. So that's the best place to reach out to us. I've got sales guys based around the world now. So, yeah, I'm really interested in, you know, amazing and interesting use cases.
Fantastic. Well, obviously, you know, you're already embedded in banking with the work you've done with ANZ and ABC and others around the world. But this is great. So, Chloe, what do you think? Do you think you'll immortalize yourself as a digital human in the future?
Yeah, I love this. I was just thinking last year on my show on Sky News Business, I got made into an avatar, Greg, by Sony, and I was a dancing person in one. I was a ninja in the other, and I love it. I think it's amazing. Although it was interesting your point there about flaws and how it can pick up all flaws, and I really liked it because they made me absolutely flawless. My skin looked amazing. I loved it.
I'll be in touch. We'll sign you up.
All right, Greg.
Human.
Amazing. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Greg.
Thanks, Emma, also for joining. And my thanks to Ron and Dave for joining us to talk about Apple. If you want to join the conversation on Twitter, make sure you tweet us at BreakingBanks1. Tell people about the show. Give us a 5-star rating on your favorite podcast platform. You can download more than 300 episodes of Breaking Banks over the past years. That's it for this week. Thanks, Chloe, for joining us.
Thanks,
again,
Brett,
as my co-host, and we'll see you guys next week.
See you later.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, for more of the latest in fintech news.